No, her name is Kristen Armstrong. She was married to Lance Armstrong for quite a bit and, you know, kind of thrust into a very public life and then a public divorce that was very hurtful, and lots of forgiveness had to take place and restoration. And she's going to talk to us about how the Lord accomplished that in her life. It's really going to be an inspiration to all of us. You are not going to want to miss this. So stay tuned. As I said before, I'm so glad that you're here, because this really is going to be a show that you are not going to want to miss. Every single word of it, I really think, is going to make an impact in your life. Holding this little book in my hand by a sweet lady named Kristen Armstrong that I can't wait to introduce to you. It's called Happily Ever After. Now, the reason why this is intriguing to me is because it's a phrase we've heard for a long time since we were little girls or little boys. But to talk to somebody who has really had to take a journey to this place, well, that's what I'm after. I'm after figuring out, how do you get here when you're coming from a place of brokenness or hurt? How does God restore and heal you? That's what Kristen's going to tell us about. So would you please all just help me to welcome our guest for today? Her name is Kristen Armstrong. Come on out, Kristen.
Hello, my friend. Hello.
Okay, so we've just really gotten a chance to know each other and to just sit down and talk just a little bit. And just in the few moments that we've talked, I've been very intrigued about really kind of getting all in your business and trying to figure
goody.
Out. Yeah. We have some questions for you, my friend, because there is a story to tell about how you get to happily ever after when you've got the kind of story that you have. And, you know, there are a lot of people watching right now who probably are coming from bits and pieces of brokenness in their past.
Absolutely.
So we need to know what your bits and pieces are. Tell us a little bit about your story, who you are, what happened, and then just the beginnings of how God began to lead you down a different path.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
just a small question.
Just a small question.
You know.
Just everything.
Everything. We want to know
everything. From my faith perspective, I was raised Catholic, and my Catholic faith was always something to me that was very routine, very rote, memorized prayers, things like that. So while it was very much the foundation of my childhood, it didn't feel very personalized to me. So if you fast forward through my life until I met Lance Armstrong and married him in 1998.
How old were you when you guys kind of met, engaged, married, all that?
26.
Okay, so you're in your 20s when this
Yes,
all right.
In my 20s. And so we meet, fall in love, have a whirlwind, amazing courtship, and ended up in a span of 5 years to have just so many things crammed into such a short period of time. So his recovery from cancer, his return to his cycling career, and going through in vitro fertilization, having 3 children, and having a huge skyrocket rise to fame and success, and then just kind of a crumbling and a plummet and explosion, and there it is. So
all
to go from Cinderella to kind of wreckage in a really short period of time.
Okay, so let's just sit there for just a second and talk about that. How was that experience for you? Because you're marrying a guy, and then all of a sudden, limelight. There's just attention cast on you, your husband, your family. Were you receptive to that, or did you kind of recoil from that spotlight, or was it okay with you? How did you feel about that?
Well, to go from marrying someone who just was recovering from cancer, so someone who's not just career future's uncertain, but, I mean, think his entire life was uncertain.
Yeah.
So we fell in love in that place. And so he was in a very different place when I fell in love with him. He was humbled by his illness. He was in more of a sensitive place. So that was such a wild ride to go from meeting someone in that beautiful place, someone who kind of was experiencing sort of like the brink of death kind of thing.
Yeah. If there's anything that'll humble you, that'll do it.
Yeah. And so that was a beautiful place to meet him. And then that all to when you add so much success, so much celebrity, all of that, your life changes so quickly that it was almost hard to keep up with all of that. Just the limelight, and also just having, as you know, 3 children. I mean, that's the change into motherhood. So to become a wife and to become a wife of a celebrity and then to become a mother all in such a short period of time was a lot of transition.
Mm-hmm. Did you find yourself, because for a lot of women, just the being a mom part alone causes her to feel like she's just in this little bubble all by herself, changing dirty diapers, and you got to mm-hmm. keep up with the dishes, and you got to feed people and all this. To add on that, in your situation, you've got this guy whose success is kind of carrying him not only out of the house, I would assume lots, because he had to travel lots, I'm
right.
sure. So he's out and about doing his thing, but you're also saying that success sort of changed him in terms of what was important to him and how you, the grounds where you first met him. So did you find that all of that kind of piled on top of each other for you? How did you handle that season of your life?
Well, there was definitely some isolation because I was living over in Europe and all my friends are back in the States. My mm-hmm. family's in the States. So here's me being still a newly married person, but also a young mother. So there was a yeah. lot of identity shift that was happening to me. And that is a lot of growth and maturation crammed into a tiny period of time. And I felt like I got lost in there. And yeah. I got lost in my faith. I got lost in who I was. Every woman, I think, can get a little bit lost in marriage
oh, yeah.
and can get lost in motherhood. And it's very easy. You can get lost in being the wife of an athlete. You can, in all those ways, you can get lost. And I got lost in all of those ways at once.
Yep. I want to know, tough question for you.
Thanks
I want to
warning.
Know. Yeah, it's yeah. a little bit of a warning, but it might not be a tough question for you. You might know right off the top of your head, but I want to know, were you angry? Were you angry during the 5 years when you started to just see this guy change from who he was when you said, I do, to who he was becoming? Was there ever a time when you weren't just sad or curious about what the future would be, but where you were just plain old flat out mad that you had made a commitment to someone who was not the same person than when you made that commitment?
I think that his evolution and the evolution of our life came in some subtle shifts that happened along the way. And frankly, the more and more absorbed that he became in his career and his traveling and all of that, I was more and more absorbed in mothering. So I think what happened more than like angry would be like kind of a chasm, which happens to a lot of people in their marriage. And I think that there's a lot of people that are at right around 5 or 7 years of being married, and it's a really challenging time because when you have small children, you're so sucked into their world and what that means to be a mother that you can't really remember all the things that you used to love or why you used to love this man.
Yeah.
I mean, all those things come up. It's a very normal thing. But to go through that in kind of a microscope of then when you show up with your family somewhere, you're on display.
Yeah.
And that's just...
And you're supposed to kind of look like all as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we did look like that. We looked lovely, but it was hard.
Okay. I hope y'all just heard what you said, because that's so interesting. That chasm that you know, is happening in little microscopic steps.
Yes.
If you ignore it, it just grows and it grows and it grows, and you don't realize till the other side
yes.
that it just started as us just not talking to each other
yes.
or just kind of passing like ships in the night.
Yes, and I've heard so many women over the years tell me stories, and I can relate exactly to how they feel in those situations
yeah.
because the same thing happened to me. That may be married to a celebrity person, but a marriage is a marriage
yeah.
and being a partner and being a mom and those things, that's common ground.
Yeah.
To a lot of women. So
now I have heard that when you kind of share your story with a group, there were some friends of mine that were actually in a group in Austin where you were speaking, and they told me about a story you told that had to do with a blanket.
Oh, yeah.
And so tell us what led to which had to be a heavy weight on you, just the news that you got that sort of led to this blanket story. But tell us about that.
That was the first time I had ever shared that story about the blanket, and I haven't spoken of it since. It is something that is really personal to me. It's a really sweet mm-hmm. story, and I think what's important about it is it shows how far you can come.
Yeah.
Because kind of as preface for that story, I always wanted my kids to have a sense of unconditional love. And that was the biggest wreckage for me after my marriage fell apart, because I felt like a failure because I wasn't able to give my kids that gift.
Hmm.
And that's what I always wanted. So years go by, and healing and work and all of that, and eventually our relationship did repair, and we have a great relationship today, co-parenting, and we're friends, and we've been through a lot, our family. Mm-hmm. And so to me, now when I look and I see that we actually do have a beautiful example of unconditional love. It doesn't look like the pretty picture that I always wanted, mm-hmm. but I can see that God still gave us that in spite of all the brokenness, in spite of bad choices, in spite of all kinds of hurt and hard work. Mm-hmm. It is that.
Yeah.
And I love that. So that's kind of the background for Blanket Story.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Okay. So I can't remember exactly when it was, maybe 6 years ago. Mm-hmm. Lance had a new girlfriend, her name's Anna, and he came to my house to tell me that Anna was pregnant. So, whoa, okay, that's big news. That has huge impact on our family. And so he was coming to tell me that, honoring me, the mother of his other children, like, hey, this is what's happening right now. I'm like, okay. Now, my kids and I have had enough awesome therapy to know that and any time when you're going through a change or something significant, your children have to be able to look at you, their mom, to see that everything's going to be okay. I had a therapist once describe it to me like this. You know, when your kid falls and splits his chin and comes running up to you and looks at you, they want to know, based on your face, like, am I okay?
Right.
Mom, am I going to be okay?
Isn't that the truth?
Because
if
the
you
truth.
Look like, oh, baby, then they fall apart.
You know, yeah. Yeah. So I knew that when they got this big news, they would be looking to me and they would look to my face. And so I really had to ask God to help me not, my kids know me too well. My face has to reflect the real me because they'll know mm-hmm. if I'm putting on an act or what. So I have this awesome friend. Her name's Peggy, and I called her and told her what was going on. A couple days later, in the mail comes circular knitting needles and a big heap of yarn. And so I balled up all this yarn, and I started knitting a baby blanket. And that was one of the finest things, because the whole time I was knitting that baby blanket, I was praying and I was preparing to welcome a child into our family. And my kids saw me carry that everywhere, the knitting needles, the ball of yarn, whether I'm in the pickup line or waiting at the dentist or whatever. They got to witness that, and they saw the softness. They saw the act of welcome and generosity, and just they saw me preparing, so it made it okay for them to prepare too.
Yeah.
And it was really neat, and it was a really sweet gift to be able to give Anna. It's an ugly blanket. I mean, I'll be honest, I'm horrible at knitting. Okay, it has a lot of holes in it, and
somehow
so does my
life. It doesn't really matter, you know?
It doesn't matter.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
No, but it was such a neat thing. It was a really special thing to know that their baby's wrapped up in this blanket.
Yeah, a blanket that you made.
That I made.
What an act of forgiveness, of mercy, of generosity. I was thinking about the fact that we were talking earlier, and just that moving forward, sometimes it boils down to choosing to move forward.
Choosing
to take the steps that are necessary to bring healing to your own heart. It's not as much about the other person as it is about you freeing yourself and saying, hey, mm-hmm. I will do what is required, whether I feel like it today or not. I am an example for these kids.
Yes.
They're watching me. And for yourself, I want to be a whole woman. I don't want to get to 60 and still be living in the past of what happened when I was 20 or 30 years old. I want to be able to move
yes.
forward. That was a courageous thing you did.
Well,
hugely
thank you.
Courageous. So many people would have not taken a baby blanket. They may have taken other things, but not
maybe
a baby blanket.
Maybe just the needles.
Maybe just the needles. That's exactly right. So I'm thinking about this little Bible verse in regards to that. Paul is writing in 2 Corinthians, and he is saying, now, however, sometimes it's a time that you need to forgive. But he doesn't just stop with forgiveness. He says, you need to forgive and bring comfort. That's the part that's
wow.
hard sometimes, because you don't mind the forgiveness. You can deal with that. You can get yourself there to forgive what has happened. But it's that bringing comfort part to the other person that has hurt you by knitting the baby blanket or by saying happy birthday when your heart is just all tensed up and you kind of don't want to extend just that little offering of graciousness, just a smile across the grocery store when you run into them that says you're okay. He says, you know what? Forgiveness sometimes is complete, not just by forgiving in your own heart, but but then just doing something kind. This is a huge example of that. And it encourages us. And so we're going to talk more about what it looks like to forgive. But for now, would you please help me by thanking Kristen for telling us so much of her incredible story.
This is going to be an incredible experience where we all get to see what it's like to experience God's unfailing love. We are incredibly loved, incredibly valuable, and incredibly capable of blowing it. That's why we are in the book of Hosea. I want you to experience it. I want you to be able to enjoy it. I want you to be able to taste and see that the Lord is good. If you're lost, the message of Hosea is that God will find you. If you're ashamed, He'll cover you. If you've wandered off, He'll come get you. If you have given up on Him, He is not going to give up on you. If you have found yourself in chains and in slavery and you don't know how you got there, He will buy you back and give you freedom. That's the incredible scandal of God's love. He would do whatever it takes to restore us. That kind of unfailing love will change everything.
We are having a great, great, great conversation. I want to read to you just a little smidge of Kristen's book. It says here, I have walked this path from the trenches of despair, through pitfalls of anger, bottlenecks of blame, along with the cliffs of loneliness and fear. I have felt the cold draft of my own sin and the warm embrace of forgiveness. In navigating my ups and downs, I found my unshakable compass in the Lord. If you can find yours more quickly, it will spare you a measure of anguish. And this is part of my intention for writing this book. This book is Happily Ever After. And Kristen had to find her journey there. And she started to tell us before we went to the break a little bit about what that looked like. The choice you made, making a baby blanket for this new little one that was going to be added sort of to your clan. And you had to feel a measure of shock and a little bit of hurt maybe or frustration about that. What were your emotions when you just kind of got the news that this baby was on the way?
I think I was mostly surprised. It wasn't so much hurt as I felt concern. I think I didn't want my own kids to feel displaced or less important. I think that was kind of where my heart was on that. But I also thought, okay, our family's changing again. And it's really important that here's a new person that's coming into our family dynamic. And luckily for all of us, she's a lovely person. Mm-hmm. But I wanted her to feel welcome, because sometimes you can feel like the ex-wife is sort of this looming figure, and it just maybe might impact the relationship with your children. And so I wanted her to feel welcome. So when I gave her that blanket.
Yeah, tell us about that moment.
I mean, I don't think Lance really understood. He was probably
like, that's standing right there while you're giving the blanket?
No, I don't think so, but I don't think he really ever acknowledged what that meant, because I think to him it was probably like an ugly blanket, but he doesn't really get it. But I think that for her, she really did understand. Like, she knew what that was. I mean, I remember her eyes filled up with tears, and she just kind of looked at me, and she's like, thank you, this is beyond beautiful. And so I knew that she understood. Mm-hmm. But it was months of carrying that around. And that the gift was in the making, really.
That's what I was going to ask you. What did the process do for you in making that blanket?
I think it was a softening of my heart. I mean, knowing that whenever I was working on that, I was also praying, and I was also thinking about how my children would receive not just this news, but, you know, another person mm-hmm. into our family. And it meant a lot to me to handle that. And handle it well.
Yeah. And you were saying something during the break about the whole dynamic of an ex-wife and a new kind of woman entering the scenario in whatever capacity, a girlfriend or a new wife. How do you feel like, or how would you encourage someone who's in that position that you were in? Why is it important to make this new person feel like you've got open arms to this scenario?
Well, I think it's one thing. It can't be faked. You know, I mean, if you aren't in a place where you really have done that kind of work on forgiveness in general, then whatever you're trying to put forward isn't authentic. Mm-hmm. But when
They'll
you really
see right through it, huh?
Yeah, and it won't feel good anyway. But I think that when you think about your children in a situation like that, particularly, I mean, if you have children, if you don't, it's not really the same. But if you do, then you have to think, here is someone that's coming into our lives that is going to have connection with my children, is going to have influence on my children, whether I like it or not. And so to make that relationship one where you have open, you welcome someone, you have open communication mm-hmm. with that person, it's essential. And to be able to get over yourself and whatever your own baggage is, to think, okay, really, do I love Luke, Grace, and Isabel more than I love myself? You bet. Mm-hmm. You bet I do. Mm-hmm. And I care about their happiness more than I care about my own. But I also care about mine. And yeah. I want a peaceful life. I want a life where I can go to different games or to productions at school, or I can go to school conferences. And I want to be able to feel good in my own skin yeah. wherever I go.
Not constantly antagonistic to this other
no.
person that's in the room.
No, I don't want to feel like, oh, I feel okay as long as this.
Yeah.
And that's the beauty of forgiveness, I think, because if you can forgive someone who's hurt you, or you can forgive circumstances that come that you didn't want, or if you can forgive yourself for things that you have contributed to situations, and to find a way to work through that takes you to a whole new place of grace and a whole new place of freedom. And that's really where you want to live.
Yeah.
That's that place of unconditional love I was talking about. That's where you need to be if you want to live that kind of liberated life.
Yeah.
Where you're not carrying this baggage and weight from the past everywhere you go.
Okay. I have a question. I want to know, do you think that it's the making of the blanket that brought about the sense of forgiveness you needed to live a peace-filled life? Or do you think that that forgiveness has to come before you're able to make the blanket and offer that little piece of generosity and extend yourself to someone else? Because aren't we all wondering, do you have to forgive first and then offer yourself? Or if it's in the offering that the forgiveness wells up in your heart and you're able to, do you understand what I'm asking?
Yes, and that, the blanket is one piece that came along years after a lot
right.
of other things. So there's so many stories in between there. But I think it's kind of like when the Red Sea parted, you know? They had to take a few steps, the Israelites did, and then the sea parted. They didn't
That's
just
good.
Like wait on the side and go, all right, well, okay, pretty soon, I think this is supposed to open on up.
Yeah,
it didn't work that way. And just like anything else, we have to take the first few steps. We have to step out in faith, and we have to step out in obedience to say, you know what, I know that this is right. I know that this is what I'm supposed to do. I may not feel it all right now, mm-hmm. but I'm going to trust that that will come.
Yeah.
And so I think that it's the answer to what you've asked me is it's both. I think you have to have a little bit of it, but then you also have to be willing to say, okay, I trust you that you're going to supply what I need as I go along.
Yeah.
Because I can choose that that's the path that I want to take. I know that that's the life that I eventually want. Because I see people who hold on to all this stuff from the past, and they can talk about a circumstance, a divorce or a death or something that was a disappointment to them. And you would honestly think it happened in the
yesterday.
Past year.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, well, that was 15 years ago.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Whoa. That person is still bringing that negativity into every situation and every new relationship that they go into. And I didn't want that. I knew that.
I love this idea that you really have to look forward and decide 10 years from now or 20 years from now, what do I want my life to look like? What kind of woman do I want to be? What kind of peace do I want to permeate my home or my children's lives? What do I want to model for them?
Yeah.
And then you have to make choices today with that in mind, not your today feelings in mind and what you do or don't want to do today.
Yes.
You have to look forward, and it takes a lot of resolve to make decisions today. Because I think about that sometimes when we're traveling, we travel a whole lot. And you know how when you're going from one area of the country maybe to another, and it's hot where you are, but it's gonna be cold where you're going. And so you have to decide not to pack for where you are right now, which is what you're tempted to do because all the stuff in your closet is the summer stuff because it's hot.
Yeah.
But you've gotta say, okay, wait a minute, I gotta pull out some of these sweaters because where I'm going, it's gonna be cold. It takes a choice to think with tomorrow in mind. And that's
yes.
what you had to do.
Yes, and just like everything else, you have to get up every day and choose. Just to have a good marriage, you get up every morning and choose to have a good marriage again that day.
Yep.
You want to be a good mom? Okay, you have to get up and choose again. You don't just make one choice and think, okay, great, yeah, I'm good. 10 years from now, I'm going to be right on track. I mean, I'm always checking in with myself.
Yep.
Like, how am I doing? How am I really doing?
Yeah.
Am I being really who I want to be?
Yeah.
Because if I'm not, I need to adjust.
Yep.
And so that's kind of an ongoing process. But it's funny because in light of travel, I remember thinking to myself, you remember when you'd get like free tickets or use miles and then you'd try to go book your ticket and there'd be like this time it's all blacked out. It's like, yeah, blackout dates. You can't use your ticket.
Yeah.
I thought, I don't want to look back on my life and look at blackout dates. Like, where was I? Mm. You know, was I hiding under the covers? Was I just checked out?
Yeah.
I didn't want to miss that. Not just in the raising of my kids, because that means everything to me. But what about me and my work
as
and my
woman,
relationship, yeah, and my ministry? What is that? Like, do I want blackout dates, or am I going to dust off and choose today that I'm going to get up and make the best of it and go in that direction?
Yeah. You mentioned even forgiving yourself. The journey and the process that is as well, in terms of, you know, forgiving others, but also just realizing what work you have to do in forgiving yourself. And I'm wondering if in your marriage you felt like, while, you know, it was kind of spotlight on what Lance was doing, but I wonder if you look back at that, or in the middle of that, if you felt like, did you give yourself a hard time for anything that you may have done or not done, the chasm that maybe you didn't notice or didn't, you know, work hard enough at kind of pulling the reins mm-hmm. in on? Was there anything you had to, in regards to that marriage, really forgive yourself for?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
And I think that that's a really important piece, because anytime we're coming out of a relationship, if we take on this mentality that we're the victim in this situation, like, this happened to me, I didn't contribute anything, that delays our healing so much. In fact, it was when I really started to realize, you know what, I played a part in this. There were things about me that were deceptive. There were ways that I lost myself. There were ways that I didn't show up the way I could have shown up. There was countless things that I would do differently. I'm 43 years old now. I would be such a different wife today.
Yeah.
And thank God for that.
Yeah.
But I like to look at that and see what my part is, because someday I hope to be married again and I don't want to make those same mistakes. Mm. I don't want to lose myself, and I don't want to make decisions that cause the chasm. Yeah. I see that, and I see that I had a part to play. But stepping out of the role of victim was huge in healing. Like, yeah, I have to forgive myself too.
That's good.
Yeah.
This has been an incredible conversation. Listen, forgiveness matters, and making the choice to forgive really can change the trajectory of your whole life. You get to make that decision, and God will help you walk down the path you need to live a peace-filled, hope-filled, joy-filled life. I'm so glad that you've been here. And listen, we've got a part two. This is just the beginning of our conversation. We're going to do it again, so you won't want to miss the second half talking with Kristen Armstrong. Thanks for being here. I hope you are doing well today. I'm so excited that you're here. This is The Chat, where we chat about stuff that I hope will be an encouragement to you and an inspiration. Today, I'm really excited because I get the chance to just get to know a woman that I really want you to know. Her name is Kristen Armstrong. She was married to Lance Armstrong for quite a bit and, you know, kind of thrust into a very public life and then a public divorce that was very hurtful, and lots of forgiveness had to take place and restoration. And she's going to talk to us about how the Lord accomplished that in her life. It's really going to be an inspiration to all of us. You are not going to want to miss this. So stay tuned. Well, listen, this is part two of a conversation we have already been having. You're going to want to make sure you go back and view part one if you have not already, because we've already started down an incredible path of life-changing insight from an incredible woman. Would you please help me to welcome Kristen Armstrong today? Thank you so much for being here. So glad that you're here. Her book is Happily Ever After. It's a devotional. And what I love about it, we were just talking about the fact that it doesn't start on January 1st. It just says day one. Why does it just say day one, Kristen?
Because you just never know when you're going to fall apart and when someone's going to hand you something, and that's day one.
That's right.
It doesn't happen always January 1st.
Isn't that the truth?
Yeah.
Sometimes those New Year's resolutions don't pan out anyway, do they?
That's true.
Yeah, we just got to start when we need to start.
That's right.
I love that. Yeah. Listen to something that Kristen writes. She says, funny how it works. When everything you thought was most valuable is taken from you, the thing that truly is the most valuable is revealed. When you lose your marriage, your family, your money, your job, your status, your comfort zone, your health, your home, your friend, your reputation, anything you thought you could never do without, it's then that you realize with amazement that you're still standing. That is when you realize that Jesus is the rock. Now listen to this. Sometimes we have to chip away at the earth to get to the rock. And God allowed the earth to be chipped away in your life just a little bit.
Yeah.
You have quite a story of all the chipping away and your choice to find solace in the rock, right?
Absolutely.
Why do you think some people don't make that choice to forgive, to move forward? The hard choices you had to make to find happily ever after. Mm-hmm. Why do some people not make that choice?
I think some people choose to find comfort in their story, the tape that plays over and over again, and so they choose to relive those experiences again and again and again because it's what they know. Mm-hmm. And so they get stuck in that place. I also think that there are people who decide that they are never going to forgive because they confuse forgiveness with condoning somebody's treatment of them.
Yeah, excusing the behavior.
Yeah, like it's approving of a situation or saying it was okay that you did that. And it isn't that at all, but people get confused and stuck there, and so they refuse to budge. And so they continue on down that path and nothing changes for them. Yeah. They're gripping so tightly onto the past that they cannot open up and see what God has for them in the present.
Yeah.
And it's so sad. But forgiveness isn't about that. Forgiveness is not condoning something. It's not giving that person permission to come and go as they please and continue certain behaviors. The only permission that it gives is for you to go free and to unhook yourself from all that stuff that hurt you in the past and let God have it.
Yeah.
Let Him take care of all of it while you go about the business of rebuilding your life after that.
Yeah.
And sometimes relationships have to end. They have to
That's
end.
That's such a good point. That's what I was just thinking.
Yeah, you forgive someone so that you let go. You're not tied to them anymore. But that doesn't mean that relationship is healthy or good or can continue.
Because sometimes in this kind of a conversation, a lot of women who may be in an abusive situation hear, I need to stay, continue to be abused and be a doormat in this situation. And that's not what you're suggesting.
No.
With forgiveness.
No, not at all. That's kind of like Christ saying, forgive them. They don't know what they do. Forgive. You can forgive, but that situation is unhealthy, and you should not stay in that situation. Mm-hmm. And some relationships you have to stay in, but they have to change.
Right.
And that's not giving someone access to come in and out of your life or condoning certain things. All it is saying, I'm not going to be tied to that anymore. Yeah. I am giving myself the permission to move forward and be free of that, so I'm going to let that go.
Yeah.
And so it takes forgiveness to me is like a choice that you make. Like some people talk about like the moment where you're saved. That's a faith moment for you. But you spend the rest of your life kind of walking out that
Working out your salvation.
Your sanctification or whatever that is.
Yeah.
I think forgiveness is a lot like that. You choose. I'm going to forgive. But of my own power, like can Kristen just forgive and like be this person? No. Kristen's just a regular old gal. But God in me can do that. So to choose to forgive is a choice. But then the whole process of letting go, that can take a little bit of time.
Okay,
it's not like all of a sudden,
know about.
Oh, now everything's better. I'm fine. Everything's great.
Yeah, you didn't wake up the next day and go, all is forgiven.
No.
Well, here's the
blanket.
It's
not quite so tidy.
Yeah.
It's not quite so tidy.
Okay, tell us about the mess of walking out your forgiveness then. What did that choice daily look like practically in your life?
Well, it's just an ongoing thing. I mean, I forgive myself all the time for falling short. I'm sure I forgave Lance for something last week. I mean, but that particular book is a journey of probably about a year and a half, maybe 2 years of doing the daily work. I mean, people would send me scriptures, strangers would send me things, I would get cool books, and I was just letting it soak into me. And I would write down in a journal or on 3x5 cards. I had a whole bunch of papers where I would write down the verses that really stood out to me. And I thought, oh, that's just for me.
Yeah.
Meant for me right now. And I saved all of those. And I started to compile them. And I started to write down how I felt in light of those verses at the time. Because I thought, I don't want to forget this.
Yes.
Because I know that he's going to do an amazing thing in my life. And I know that after this is over, I'm going to be better for it. Didn't feel like it at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't.
Yeah.
I didn't feel like it at the time. But I thought, you know what? I'm going to go that way. And it was so neat because at the end of this time, this was the result of that. And really, that is about gratitude to me. That's what that book is
about. Yeah, I read in here that you said this is your thank you note to God.
Yeah.
Like, thank you for healing me and restoring me.
Yeah.
You know, I have three boys. I have three kids like you do. And one of my sons, he's just accident prone, Kristen. He just keeps falling and breaking things and fracturing things. He's got a cast on right now, as a matter of fact. He fell riding bikes with his cousin and fractured one arm.
Aww.
He's got a huge sort of skinned patch right here on his leg. And so, of course, we took him to the doctor and everything and got a cast here. But they gave him an ointment that we needed to put on, just like the salve that we needed to put on his leg on a very regular basis to get it all healed up. And I was watching this process one day because it just stings just a tad to put it on when it was just really raw and a brand new wound. And I thought, man, you know what? If we kind of hang on to this ointment, we have it in the house, we've gotten the prescription, but we don't apply it because it stings that little bit and he doesn't want it applied, then it does us no good to have it if we're not going to put this sucker on his leg. You know, that's where the healing comes in, is when we daily, actually several times a day, we had to apply this ointment to the wound for it
to
work.
That's awesome. Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm thinking, the Lord gave you these scriptures, whatever means they came, whether it was just through your daily Bible reading or the pastor preaching something, or a stranger sending you this verse on a coffee mug or something like that. And there were certain ones that jumped out to you, and that is God giving us ointment. That's what he's doing, is he's saying,
and it hurts a little bit.
And it hurts a little bit.
Yeah.
It stings a little bit when you receive kind of the directive, that verse, you kind of feel the conviction of what that verse, you know, but that's what I think Ephesians chapter 6 talks about. The sword of the Spirit is the rhema word of God. And that's when, like, the word comes alive to you, when it jumps off the page, when, like, you know, it's a verse you've read before. But this day, it's like the Holy Spirit has taken out a highlighter and it just pops up off the page.
Oh, yeah.
That's the Spirit handing you his sword and saying, hey, this right here is going to do some work in your life, and it's going to change your life if you'll apply it to the wound. And so you were daily, proactively, practically putting it on the wound, even though it stung a little bit.
That's awesome. That is true. That's exactly what it was like. And it did sting a little bit, but if you really do want to be healed, it's just like the story of the paralytic and the mat. Like, do you want to be healed?
Do you want to be healed or not? I mean,
do
it seems like a silly question in the moment.
But it's not.
It's not.
No, because some people really don't. And they say they do, but they're not willing to pick up their mat. You know? They're not.
Yeah.
So if you want it, he's offering it.
Mm-hmm.
But we do. We have to apply it. We have to do the work. We have to be willing to go there within ourselves to say, what do I need to let go of? What do I need to change?
Yeah.
How do I need to grow? Instead of going, hey, you did, you.
Oh, we get so comfortable pointing fingers at everybody else.
Yeah.
We have pity parties, and we invite all our friends to our pity party.
Mm-hmm.
And we love rehearsing and going over the details of what happened to us over and over and over again. And it really causes us to think about what kind of friend we are to those people. Because if we're enabling and applauding and supporting that friend of ours who's constantly going over her drama, maybe it's time for one of us to be friend enough to her to say, it's time for you to wake up out of this spiritual slumber and get on with the business of putting the ointment on so that you can be healed.
Yes.
So did you have friends like that in your life?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, one of them's here today.
Really?
Yeah.
Were you a little bit mad at her at the time for making you wake up and move on? Like, did it feel uncomfortable for her to kind of, or one of your friends to kind of have to look you in the eyes and say, let's go. Today, I know you're having a bad day. You don't feel like getting up out of bed, all that. But you got kids to raise. You have a life to live. God is in you. Let's go.
There was a time kind of in the immediate wake of that where I was not eating or sleeping well, and it was just a really strenuous time. And I have a really dear friend named Paige who said to me, you know something? I see that. You look skinny. You look exhausted. You know what? We're going to train for a marathon, and I'm going to make you hungry, and I'm going to make you tired. And it was awesome. She did. I had never done anything like that before. And next thing you know, I'm eating everything in sight and sleeping like a baby. And I'm like, thank you, God. She helped me. And it gave me a lot of confidence. And it also led to a career with Runner's World magazine. And, I mean, doors opened.
Yeah.
You know, but I had to take some steps.
Yeah, because you had a friend that was friend enough to say, let's
get up.
Go. Get up.
Get up. And get. If you think you're tired, I'll make you tired.
I love that. We need some friends like that in our life, right?
We all do.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
We're going to come right back and talk just a little bit more with Miss Kristen. In the meanwhile, if you're sitting with a friend of yours, just shake her on the shoulders and say, get up, girl. You look a little hungry. You look a little sleepy. Let's go take care of that. I'll meet you back here after the break.
This is going to be an incredible experience where we all get to see what it's like to experience God's unfailing love. We are incredibly loved, incredibly valuable, and incredibly capable of blowing it. That's why we are in the book of Hosea. I want you to experience it. I want you to be able to enjoy it. I want you to be able to taste and see that the Lord is good. If you're lost, the message of Hosea is that God will find you. If you're ashamed, He'll cover you. If you've wandered off, He'll come get you. If you have given up on Him, He is not going to give up on you. If you have found yourself in chains and in slavery and you don't know how you got there, He will buy you back and give you freedom. That's the incredible scandal of God's love. He would do whatever it takes to restore us. That kind of unfailing love will change everything.
Right in the middle of an incredible conversation. Listen, this is part two of a conversation we've already been having with Kristen Armstrong. She is a woman who has taken us, just in this little conversation that we've had, she's taken us all the way from brokenness and hurt and unforgiveness to healing and wholeness. And that's the story, the journey that the Lord has had her on. But there is so much more that is to come in the story of your life. And I want to know where you are right now as a woman, as a mother of three growing children, a woman in ministry. You're a writer. You're writing for articles for Running World magazine, mm-hmm. as well as others, not to mention, you know, not to forget to mention your book as well. So there's a lot going on in your life right now. What have you seen God doing in your present tense circumstances?
Well, since that time, I've written seven books.
Seven books. Just a few books on the side, you know.
I have been a contributing editor for Runner's World magazine since 2004. So I run a lot of races. I've done many more marathons and ultra marathons since then. Now I'm a mother of teenagers. So my son Luke is 15, and then I have twin daughters, Grace and Isabel, who are 13.
Teenagers, all three of them are teenagers.
Yeah, so pray for me. Mm-hmm. So that's a lot of fun.
How are your kiddos doing? Did it take them a while to get kind of where you felt like everybody was healthy and on the right track, or were they doing well right away? How are they?
Well, they were really young when we went through our divorce, 3, 1, and 1. So mm-hmm. I think at different stages in their development, I think that they've dealt with different things that kind of come out. So it's just sort of an ongoing thing, different questions that come later and things like that. So it's been really important to me to keep communication with them open on every subject, and that's just kind of how we roll.
Yeah.
And it works out for us.
Yeah. And yeah. So what do you see kind of happening next in your journey? What would you like to see? What would you like to see happen, Kristen?
Well, I just finished teaching a class on compassion, so I've been working on having a lot more compassion for everyone else and myself. Mm-hmm. I have an amazing gratitude practice that I've been doing for about a year and a half.
Okay, what is a gratitude practice?
Well, every morning I wake up and have my devotional time and whatnot, and then I write down in a journal. I'm on volume 4 now of little cramped, tiny handwriting, and I write down every day 10 things that I'm thankful for. I'm grateful for this because, and then follow that up. It has truly been transformative for me.
It sounds like a book to me. It sounds like a book is coming out of that to me.
There might be a book coming out of that. It's really changed. It has transformed me by the renewal of my mind mm-hmm. to change my thought life because mm-hmm. it's slowly just worked its way so that I have more gratitude, not just in when I'm writing my 10 things, but all the time. And that's really changed me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So because, you know, really what gratitude is, it is proof. It's like outward proof that you really do trust God.
Yes.
So it's revelation as to whether or not you trust God. So you're in the midst of stuff going on in your life and chaos in your life. But when you choose in the midst of the chaos to, yes, still make your prayer request known to God, but at the same time say, but I'm grateful for A, B, C, and D because, like you're doing,
yeah.
that discipline, it stirs in you that faith, that deep down trust that you still have that your God is who he says he is and will do what he says that he will do.
Yeah.
And Philippians chapter 4 says that gratitude activates the peace of God, which surpasses all understanding. That's what you're experiencing.
And it guards
our
hearts and minds.
It guards your hearts
and minds. All that negative thinking. Yeah. And I've even transformed my language in my prayer life because now I even have the confidence to thank God in advance for things that are coming true. So I'm excited about that.
Yes.
Yeah, it's changing everything. Thank you for working this out for me. I don't know how, and I don't need the outcome. I just need to say thank you. It's huge. It changes every day. I can see such a big difference in the past year in my life.
Are you speaking a lot to groups of women or mm-hmm. Bibles? Are you speaking?
Yeah.
Is that kind of one of the main things that you're doing right now in your life is teaching and speaking?
Because
and
the teenagers.
Should be, is what I'm trying to say. You
thank
should
you.
Be
the
speaking
teenagers.
Because people need to hear this.
Yeah, I love writing. I love speaking. Probably not as much as I love writing. And I've recently gone back to graduate school, so I'm getting a master's in counseling. So that's exciting. Yes. So I'm a student again right now. And
just a few things on your plate.
Yeah.
Not much.
Yeah, yeah, but I'm not busy because I don't
how
like
are
that.
You not, how are you not busy as a
because
graduate
I hate
student?
That. I hate that word. I refuse.
You refuse to,
I refuse
to
be
say
busy.
That you're busy. You refuse to be busy. How do you keep margin in your schedule with all that you have going on? How do you keep bits of boundary and margin that keep you from being busy?
Well, I've tried that before, and I can be so hyper organized and hyper efficient that I can make everything
uh-huh.
move, but I've tried to get out of that rut of being that person all the time because that person's not as fun. So instead of that, like the greater my gratitude is, the more things just, they just get done, but I'm thinking to myself while I'm doing them, like, hey, stop trying so hard, try easy. And I try easier, and then next thing you know, there's more time. And next thing you know, I'm like, it's okay. It'll get done. It's fine. And that brings me so much peace that I forget about busy, because busy stresses me out.
Busy
makes me crabby.
Busy stresses us all out, doesn't it, y'all?
Yeah.
Yeah, we don't
yeah,
like busy.
I don't like days like that. I feel like I'm short with my kids. I don't have time for my friends. What's the point of working on all this stuff if I don't have time to sit and talk with a friend who's in a place? What's the point of that? Am I so busy? Am I so busy going to school to become a counselor that I can't talk to my child? No.
That's great.
No, I'm not going to be like that. And I told myself that, and I talked to my kids before I ever went back to school saying, hey, I'm thinking of doing this. What do you think? I mean, this could impact you. What if I have tests or what if I have classes at night? What does that look like? And they were so awesome. They're like, Mom, you're so smart. You should do whatever it is you want to do. And it's been beautiful because they're doing homework. And so is Mom. And there we are.
You are so calm. Isn't she so, like, her, your personhood is just kind of calm. Mm. Is this your countenance? Normally you're just kind of laid back and easygoing?
I wouldn't say. I mean, I can be a type A person.
Okay.
But I think I am pretty steady.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I have a lot of this going on. But I don't know if that's my personality and that's what shows. Or is it because I pray and meditate and do my gratitude journal. Like, are my practices making me that way, or am I that way? I think it's kind of a combination.
Okay. I have some questions, Miss Kristen. Okay. We're going to need another hour. I feel like we need another hour. Okay. I appreciate what you're saying about the busyness stuff and work. Don't work harder, you're working easier. Mm-hmm. But I need you to tell me exactly what that means. Like, what does that look like? Because you still only have 24 hours in your day, just like all of us only have 24 hours in our day. Mm-hmm. And you're still trying to manage your home and feed teenagers and go to graduate school and be a writer for all of these 7 books mm-hmm. that you have and more. And speaking and teaching people who very much need to hear this message. So you have got a lot on your plate. So, I mean, in a practical weekly or daily sense, how are you able to keep yourself from being on edge, irritated, and busy? I mean, practically, what does that look like? There have to be some practice. I'm very curious.
So it's the idea, I think, of connecting to source first. It's why we go to our Bibles or our devotionals in the morning, like first thing. Before you do anything else, that's what I do first. And I think of it as literally plugging in, tapping into that place inside me that is always calm. And everyone has it. We just don't know how to access it regularly. We don't know how to access it immediately. And at first it's awkward. You can go to that place and you have to sit down and have no distractions and, okay, I'm going to relax now. I'm going to pray and meditate. I'm going to have quiet. But over time, it becomes so much more natural that you can even go to that place within you when you're in the middle of a conversation with someone and they're completely, you know, lighting all your buttons and being a human trigger.
Yeah.
In that moment, you can say, wow, okay. There is the place within me that is quiet, that is like a sanctuary, and I can go to that place now more regularly. And so it keeps me throughout the day just checking in and, mm-hmm. and connecting in with the parts of myself that are called higher instead of the parts that drag me down. Mm-hmm. So that's I guess the best way for me to describe it is just to say that I try to connect to source, God, for the energy that I need and the direction that I need. And then when I'm going from that place, I'm operating from a place of abundance before the day ever starts.
And so you're not jumping into the day in a hurry.
No.
Oh my gosh, I'm already out of time and the day hasn't even
started
yet.
Scarcity. I'm up late. The lunches aren't made. Oh no, the gas is low. I mean, you can say everything that's scarce in your life and you approach it that way and the whole day you'll be scrambling. You'll be late. You'll be stressed. You'll be short with people. I've had days like that. I get it. You know, I can see how I am when I'm like that. I don't like it particularly.
Yeah.
and my kids don't either. No one enjoys me that way.
Yeah.
But the other way is different.
You still have to make practical choices because you can wake up and do exactly what you've said and have a sense of abundance toward the day. And yet still, if you did not go fill up your tank the night before, mm-hmm. you're going to have no gas in the car in the morning.
Right.
Or the lunches are not going to be made on time.
Right.
So you have got to be saying lots of no's to things so that you have room in your life for the bigger yeses.
Yeah. And I think that's part of that process in the morning of being grateful and being intentional, because if you set out with the bigger things in mind first, then you'll give those the due priority and the energy that they need. And when you aren't stressed out, then you will go like, oh yeah, I should probably stop here and get gas while I'm on the way. It's just a different, your mind is clear. So you're not so muddied and scrambling all the time. And that's where that feeling comes from. And then things start to go wrong and then we turn negative.
Yes.
And that's what I'm really working on a lot right now and trying to model that for my kids, because kids have a lot. They do.
They do.
My kids are shuffling between 2 houses and 3 sports and they have all that on their plate. And so I don't want them to have that horrible rushed feeling all the time too. So.
Well, I think it's so interesting that we, you know, kind of ending on this note of talking about, you know, your countenance and the way we can see the restoration that God has brought in you. We can see it externally. We can see just by the peace that is on you and in your life. And the thing is, we all have the opportunity to experience that by what I really hear you saying is prioritizing, putting first things first, meeting with God, realizing that our peace and contentment and joy really does come from Him. Do not quote me on this, but I think it's Martin Luther that said something like, today is a really busy day, so I must not spend 20 minutes with the Lord. I must spend 2 hours with Him today.
Wow.
Because it's really busy today. And so that's
the
cool same
mindset.
Yeah, it's the same idea of just knowing what comes first and putting that first and realizing that really will reorient the whole rest of your day and the rest of your life. You've modeled that for us. Would you guys please help me to thank her?
Thank you.
I'm so glad that you're here. This has been such a great conversation. I really feel like we need another hour or two to talk to Miss Kristen, but you can hear more from her and all the guidance that she has, the wisdom that she really does have to give to women like us, all of us who are in busy places in life, who have stuff we've got to get over from the past, and we want to live a healthy, whole, complete, full life in the Lord. This is just one of her incredible books, a devotional that you're going to want to get your hands on. But pick up Everything You Can by Kristen Armstrong, because she really is a blessing. Listen, you're going to be able to watch this program Tuesdays and Thursdays of this month at noon, 6 p.m. or 10 p.m. Central Standard Time. Any of those three times on Tuesdays and Thursdays, you'll find part one and part two of this conversation. You could just go to thechatwithpriscilla.com and I'll be right there. Or you can just check your local listing on the NRB channel, because we'll be there as well. Thank you so much for joining us. We cannot wait to do this again. I hope you have a great day.